Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the Premier Radio Networks, including 177 stations now, and XM 166, on St. Patrick's Day, March 17th, 2012. This is episode 857. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by BigCommerce, from web design to accounting to marketing. BigCommerce provides everything you need to run a successful online business. For a limited time, get 2 months free to build your store. Visit BigCommerce.com and click on the radio icon, then type in my name, Leo. And by Stamps.com. Nobody likes waiting in line at the post office. That's why I use and recommend Stamps.com. Buy and print official U.S. postage using your own computer and printer. You'll never have to go to the post office again. For my special offer, go to Stamps.com, click the radio microphone, and use my promo code TechGuy. Well, a good day to you. Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. And it's time to talk computers, the internet, cell phones, home theater, and iPads. Probably mostly iPads today. This is the technology show. So anything with a chip in it, we will talk about. I'll answer your questions, give you my twisted point of view on the whole thing, fill you in on what's been going on. And by the end of the show, through pure osmosis, you should have a grasp of everything you need to know about this very rapidly changing field of technology. And why should you care? Well, it's changing everything we do and changing how we get our entertainment, of course, changing how we work. It's changing how we worship in churches, and temples and synagogues and mosques. It's changing how we see the world. It's changing how we communicate. It's shrinking the world. This is important stuff. And I'm very glad to have been doing this for the last, I started in 20 years ago. So the last 20 years watching this up close, I've had a wonderful front row seat to an amazing revolution, something you don't get very often. There are a few eras I can think of where we've seen such incredible, rapid, dramatic change. Technology has always changed human lives from the plow to the zipper. I mean, imagine what a revolution the zipper was. All right, stop imagining. I've lost them. To the chip, the microprocessor. And this week, the new iPad came out, and yet another step was taken in this revolution. And I think the only question is, how big a step was it? There are some people who look at the new iPad. I have one right here, right in front of me. Imagine, if you will, I am holding one up to the microphone. Listen to that. Doesn't that sound beautiful? There are people who say, oh, you know, it's just an evolutionary step. And it is, in the iPad's life, in the life of technology. And it is. You can't deny that. It's pretty much the same as other iPads. It's just faster and better looking with a good camera. That's the highlights. And in fact, if I think about the evolution of personal technology and computing, what we're seeing with the iPad is just a logical next step in some ways. Certainly, if you had a computer in the early days, you remember, did anybody have an Apple II or a Commodore? You remember, you were lucky if you could get 8 colors on that screen. Maybe if you had a fancy one, you had 16 colors. Oh, the really top of the line, you had 256 color choices on your screen. And how many dots? Not many. Not many. It was maybe 512 by 340, if you were lucky. Then they got higher resolution, more dots per inch. The early computers had maybe 50, 60 dots per inch, pixels per inch. And that, 72 pixels per inch was considered the standard for a long time. That was kind of what we had, 72 pixels per inch. And we liked it, and we were happy. We got more colors up to, got 16,000 colors, then You had 32,000 colors. Now you got 4 billion possible color. 4 billion possible color choices. We kind of stopped at 4 billion because it turns out that's about as many colors as the eye can resolve. You don't need more than 4 billion colors to accurately represent the world. So the progress stopped in that area. There was some messing with it. There's some finesses there. But essentially, that was it. Then the resolution started to go up, and you had a 1024 by 768 screen. Remember the 800 by 600? That was considered pretty good. Then 1024 by 768. And then if you were really lucky, maybe, you have a giant monitor, a 30-inch monitor or bigger, a 1920 by 1200 monitor, and you felt pretty darn good. Pixels per inch went up from 72, maybe 120 pixels per inch on a typical Windows machine. Well, this is the Retina display on this iPad. This iPad is 260 pixels per inch. Remember, the standard was 72. We're almost four times more pixels per inch. What does that mean? Well, it means you can't see the pixels anymore. It means that's what Apple means by a Retina display. It means at a normal viewing distance, which on an iPad is pretty close because it's a personal device, maybe just a couple of feet, 18 inches away, you can't see any pixels. I'm pretty nearsighted, and even if I take off my glasses and get real close to the screen, I still can't see any pixels. It's very high resolution. And what that means is, it's a logical step, but what that means is suddenly everything on the screen looks real. Pictures are extraordinarily vivid. Video appears on the screen in the same resolution it would appear on your HD TV. And this is a significant shift, I think, in what our expectations will be going forward for a screen. When you first get the new iPad, and I've had it for only a day now, but when you first get the new iPad, your first reaction is, yeah, that looks nice. I can see the difference. It doesn't necessarily whack you over the head, but yeah, I can see the difference. Pictures are clearer. Images look good. We don't even think about color anymore, but the color is very vivid. The detail is excellent. And as you look at it, you start reading a magazine or a book. You feel how fluid it is. And this is what I think is important about the iPad. Pretty soon you forget you're using a computer. You're just doing stuff. There's no mouse. That was a huge change, wasn't it? There's no mouse. There's no keyboard anymore. There's nothing between you and the experience. Suddenly, it's very intimate. It's very real, and this is what Apple's been saying. It's post PC, and so it is the next step, I think, in personal computing. And you see it when you see young kids, 2 years old. Literally, I'm not kidding you, 2 years old, firing up an iPad and going to their favorite TV show or program, actually using it. It's pretty amazing without any tutorial. In fact, it seems like the kids or people in general who've never used a computer before, those people are better able to use the iPad. They don't have any preconceived notions about what a computer is. They don't look for the mouse. They don't say, how do I close a window? There are no windows to close. They don't say, where's the menu? We say that, those of us who grew up with our Commodore 64s and our Apple IIs and our Windows 3.1, we say, where's the menu? how do I close that window? Where's the start menu? Yeah, there's nothing like that. There's just the experience of using technology. It maybe even isn't technology. I think this is really what the iPad was designed to be. There's no sense of lag. The screen is very realistic. You really feel like you're there. And you're able to do... This is the real test for people like me. Maybe like you too, geeks. Geeks who are used to... Who have grown up with the way things used to be. Can we feel comfortable in this environment? Do we say, hey, where's the DOS prompt? I need to write a batch file. or do we just go, oh, and just kind of forget that there were such things, and just feel comfortable, and just start using it and start creating and start doing things, making movies, making pictures. I played with the dictation. This is one of the interesting things about the iPad. You know, one of the complaints I've always had about the iPad is the keyboard. I don't like typing on glass. And I've even seen a lot of geeks, people like me, writers especially, who actually have keyboards with their iPads. This has voice dictation, and I've been using it. And you may not need a keyboard. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, let's talk about it. Oh, my goodness, it's St. Patrick's Day, isn't it? Well, I'm going to do this accent for the next 3 hours and drive you absolutely nutty out of your tree. Maybe I won't. Maybe I'll just pretend I am. Imagine I'm talking like the Leprechaun on the Lucky Charms commercial. I am wearing green thanks to Liz Romero, who gave me a nice green necklace. Did you get this at Mardi Gras? Oh, it's Shamrocks. That's cool. Thank you. Hey. Oh, I got so excited about the iPad. By the way, we don't know what we're calling it. Apple calls it the new iPad, but how long can that last? Reviewers are calling it the new iPad, but again, at some point, it's going to have to just be the iPad. It's the iPad 3, third generation iPad, 2012 iPad, all of those. Apple will probably use all of those designations. It's hard. It is... Now, of course, there's the question that a lot of you will ask is, a couple of them. First of all, should I get one? If you have an iPad 2, it is a significant upgrade, I think. It's a lot faster, and the pictures on the screen is incredible, and the camera on the iPad 2 is so horrible as to be non-existent. It looks a little goofy, I agree, taking pictures with a giant tablet. Or video. But there's a certain advantage to it that may overcome your shyness about doing it. You're seeing the picture or the video at full resolution. You're not looking through a little viewfinder or looking at a tiny LCD on the back of your camera. You're seeing what the picture is going to look like in virtually full resolution. Somebody, a professional photographer, compared it to what they call a view camera. Remember the old days? You want goofy. Remember the old days? You saw it on Three Stooges and in cowboy movies where the guy would come, he'd have a tripod, he'd have a big box on legs, and he'd put a hood over his head and look and bend over and look into the camera with a black hood over his head and say, smile at the birdie, and poof, the flash would go off. That's called a view camera because the photographer is actually seeing a really big display of, and that's why he has to put the fabric over his head because he has to block out the light. This photographer suggested, I'm going to make bags that people can wear, put their iPad in and wear because it's like a view camera. And it is, and I think it's a very different and a very interesting experience in photography. Now, admittedly, this is not as high quality a camera as, say, your digital SLR. But it is, I would say, in most respects, as good as your point-and-shoot, and in some respects, better. And you're seeing, I think from learning photography, this is a remarkable device because you're seeing what you're taking a picture of. Similarly, when you're shooting a movie, you're seeing the movie play back as you're taking it. It's very interesting. I think in some ways this is going to change photography. I've been very happy with the images I'm getting. You can't zoom. You can, but you don't want to zoom because you'll reduce the quality. But the color rendition is, as long as there's enough light, this is a very good camera. Doesn't feel like a camera phone camera. It feels like a Canon Elf. It feels like a good pocket camera. With some additional features, because once you've got the picture, Apple has released a new version of iPhoto. It's unfortunately $5, but it's worth it. I would recommend it. It lets you do a lot of editing. And there are a host of other camera editing, messing with picture programs on the platform that are fantastic. That give you the opportunity to do all sorts of things, including shoot stop action, motion movies, tilt shift, retouching them, all sorts of filters, framing. There's even a Photoshop now. Adobe released Photoshop Touch. And obviously they were looking at the new iPad and saying, boy, we got to do something. We've got to take our flagship program and make it at least somewhat available. The beauty of this Photoshop on a desktop computer, well, Photoshop Elements is $100. The full Photoshop is $700. This is $10. Apple has, fortunately for us, kind of established a standard for pricing on apps, and you can't charge $100. You can, I guess, but nobody will buy it. $100 for an app. And video, same thing. You've got not only iMovie, which Apple has significantly upgraded, but there are other programs like Avid Studio, which are just dramatically better video editors. You're doing it all on the tablet. It's the camera, it's the editor, and then it's also the uploader, because you've got Facebook, or you've got Vimeo, or you've got YouTube. So it's from soup to nuts. It's the whole production environment in a little easy-to-use touch device. You know I'm not a rabid Apple fanboy. In fact, I far prefer my Android phone to my iPhone. But I just have to say, this is, I think, a significant bridge or river we've crossed here in technology. I really do. 8888 Ask Leo. That's the phone number. The website, techguylabs.com. In fact, we have on that website, we have the phone number. We have a link to our fabulous chat room. Always good to go in there and see everybody who's up early and listening to the show and interacting, and so much fun. You'll also find links to previous shows and that phone number if you can't remember it, and I don't blame you because I say it really fast. 8888 Ask Leo. Ken, our first call of the day from Oak Park, California. Hi, Ken. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi. I bought a AT&T Velocity USB modem, which I'm running off the SIM card for my cell phone, and it's given me problems. I can't watch video on it. It jams up. I can't take big downloads like Windows Update.
So the Velocity uses AT&T's 3G, right? Not its 4G.
3G, yeah.
Yeah. So it'll get better as people move off the 3G, but the problem is with all mobile internet access solutions, they're all using the cellular carrier's towers. And it's the nature of the way this technology works that it is not, it is potentially faster than your home internet connection, but it suffers more from congestion. And here's why. They have to run internet access to every single cell tower. It's as if each cell tower is its own internet access point. There's no kind of mesh system, no way of sharing. You have to run a certain amount of bandwidth out there. Typically, it'll be a megabit and a half. I guess now on these 4G, I'm seeing people report as much as 80 megabit downloads. So that's, you know, obviously that's as much data as they've run out to that cell tower. But that's if you're the only person using it. If two people are using it, divide it in half. Four people are using it, divide it in a quarter. Eight people are using it, it's 1/8. You can see how rapidly the available bandwidth gets chopped. And as more and more people are using 3G and 4G phones, it's getting worse and worse. So, for instance, when you go somewhere, San Francisco is a good example, New York City a good example, where there's a lot of people with smartphones, 3G is almost unusable. And that's what you're experiencing, Ken. Whatever they promised you, if you read carefully, was maximum or available. But your mileage may vary depending on congestion, and that's what you're experiencing. Might work better in 3 in the morning, but basically you're getting what you can get. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Extreme, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. We're talking about, and this is going to be more and more of an issue, the problem with 3G and 4G data plans. You know, if you get the new iPad, for instance, you will be spending roughly $10 a gigabyte for a month for LTE access. Now, if you live in an area where Verizon LTE exists, you're going to get great throughput until everybody gets the new iPad or an LTE phone, and then it's going to go down. And, you know, it's very similar to the congestion you see with a cable network. With cable modems, you can only be as fast as the amount of data that the cable company puts into your neighborhood divided by the number of people using it right now and the amount they're using it. Of course, because cable modems, like LTE, are very fast, people tend to use more. They watch movies. They download massive files. They upload massive files. And it's very easy to overwhelm a connection that has a limited amount of bandwidth. So it's very implementation dependent. It really depends on the phone company or the cable company and how much bandwidth they put to that. We'll call it a head end. It's a cell tower in the cell phone world, and it's a head end in the cable world. But the amount of bandwidth they put to that last connection where everybody's connected to really is going to affect your ability to get downloads. So 3G is really kind of overwhelmed. 4G is better right now. I expect 3G will get better. Here's the problem. As people move from 3G to 4G, it is a different system, so you'll see better 4G until people move there, and then you'll see worse 4G and better 3G. But at that point, it may well be that the cell company starts to cut back the amount of bandwidth it puts into these systems, and so you get no gain. It's very implementation specific. And the best thing to do is to ask around and say, what are you using? Is it fast? Do you like it? And it will change. It will change over time as more people do more. The good news about bandwidth, despite what the cable companies and everybody else tells you, the good news about bandwidth is there's a lot. There's almost an infinite amount of bandwidth available. It's up to them to turn it on. So if you're getting a bad experience with your MiFi or your 3G modem, your AT&T Velocity, it's dependent on what cell site you're using, who else is using it, the time of day, very dependent on time of day. Again, middle of the night is going to be great because nobody's using it. It's going to be worse when there are the most people using it, probably during the day, business hours, that kind of thing. 8888 Ask Leo. Rich is on the line. Rich from New York City. Hey, Rich. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, Leo. Thanks for taking my call.
Appreciate your calling. What can I do for you?
I'm calling because I have an iPad 1 and come across a strange phenomenon recently where when I go to update my apps from the device, normally you get like a little slit and it shows a little progress bar.
Yeah, and there's three things it'll say. It'll say pause, waiting, loading, and installing. I guess that's four.
Right.
And you're stuck at waiting. Let me guess.
Yeah, it's been stuck.
You know why? Because there's a whole bunch of people who just bought new iPads. And they're all, I had the same problem. They're all hitting Apple's servers right now updating. So here's what you can do. If there's an app you really want, double tap it. And what that does is it tells the iPad, hey, this one's the one I want right now.
Yeah, actually, Leo, I've tried that.
And it's still not doing
the problem, it. No, it's like frozen. And what happens is I'll reboot the iPad. It just stays that way. Everything else works on the iPad. Like I can get online and stuff. But the whole, app store and update process is frozen.
Yeah. When did that start happening?
It started yesterday for some strange reason.
No, it's no strange reason. I just told you the reason. Everybody just bought a new iPad. I was doing the same thing, and I had 50 or 60 apps that were updating. Here's what happens when you get this new iPad. I'm a little disappointed by the way this works. And it's going to affect you, even though you don't have a new iPad, because Apple has limited servers. We see this. I don't know if you remember when Apple announced the new iPad on March 7th, and everybody was trying to buy one. All the Apple services went down because they're all shared. So Apple, and this is true. This is very typical. This is similar to the previous question, which is people don't build for the maximum usage; they build for the average usage. So it would be prohibitively expensive for Apple to put servers online to accommodate these few days a year when it's crazy. They probably should, or they should buy more servers temporarily. There are certainly ways to do that. There are companies that specialize in handling these high server load days, but Apple apparently didn't do that. And actually, if you think about it, there are so many people. How many millions? I would guess that they sold that they literally yesterday, between yesterday and today, more than a million iPads. That's a million people who are going onto the Apple servers and downloading updates to their apps. And in many cases, my case, I have 300 apps. Typical to have at least 100. So all of those people are trying to update all of those apps. That's 100 million apps being updated right now. Well, of course it's terrible. So I let mine run overnight. Eventually it cleared. All of them cleared. They will clear. It is normal. But it's going to be bad for a few days. If you do get a new iPad, there are two ways you can restore your iPad if you have an old one. There's the iCloud over the airway, and there's the physical connection to the computer way. Whatever you do, don't do the iCloud way. I did it. It took 2 hours. And then, after those 2 hours, it had restored the folders and the icons and all of that. Each app then had to go and download a new copy. It was as if I was updating every app on the iPad, and that took another day, literally. It just finished, you know, 10 o'clock this morning. Okay, it only took 22 hours. So imagine there's a million people doing that right now, and it's going to be that way for, Rich, I hate to tell you, for a few days, maybe a week, and then it will be all right. If you can update, actually, I gave up. You know what? I didn't take 22 hours. I gave up, and I went home, and I plugged my iPad into the computer and restored from the computer. I made sure all the apps were updated on the computer. I thought, well, this is good. I'll have all my apps on iTunes. They'll all be updated. Everything's up to date, and now I'll just sync the new iPad onto my computer. Not only did it destroy all my folders, you know, rearrange all the icons, they still had to get updated over the air. I don't know why. This is just Apple's, I think they screwed up. So just expect it. It's just going to happen. And it just, I would just let it go. I would just let it go and live with it. And yeah, if you have an old iPad and, you know, you didn't get a new iPad, it's certainly going to make you irate that all these new iPad owners are screwing you up. Apple's like most companies. You know, there are very few companies, Facebook and Google are two that leap to mind, that very rarely have these problems. They have more servers than the man upstairs. I mean, they have so much bandwidth. They practically are the internet. Apple does not. Despite the fact that Apple is now the most valuable company in the world, Apple stock price cracked $600. It costs more to buy a share of Apple stock than it does to buy a new iPad. And they have $100 billion plus in the bank, and they still don't have enough servers. So that just gives you something, gives you some idea of how hard this is to do right. And they're not doing it right. So just put it up, put it off. 8888 Ask Leo. We'll keep talking. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I have no idea what that is. Oh, it's Draw Something. Is this the official Draw Something theme song? Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Do not start playing this game. Especially if you're trying to do a radio show. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, Scott Wilkinson. I completely forgot about him again. Scott,
you were just so into that game.
I couldn't stop playing. Scott Wilkinson is our home theater wizard and the online editor for Home Theater Magazine. Joins us every week to answer questions about home theater. Hi, Scott.
Hey, Leo. Happy St. Paddy's Day.
I see you're wearing green. That's good.
I am. I'm wearing the green. I
walked out of the house, of course, with no green on. I don't think I own green clothing. I don't. I know I don't.
I got a couple of things.
What am I going to do with a green thing? So I do. So thank goodness Liz Romero in our office had a shamrock necklace, which she put on my head, and now I'm safe from pinching.
I remember that from school.
No, so, yes, they know. Real, you'd say, "Oh, yes, that's childish," but no, my staff pinches. let us, and they don't hesitate to pinch me. Let us get a question or two from your audience. Scott is at hometheater.com. First of all, let's talk about the poll from last week.
Oh, yes, the poll from last week.
I liked the topic.
Yes, was whether or not you have carte blanche in your theater.
Yeah.
How is your wife acceptance factor? Has your
or
spouse...
Or spouse, as we say now.
Really, it would be better to say spouse. You're exactly right.
Because we have women in this audience...
It's true.
Who
it's
have
true.
Huge home theaters.
Yes.
And whose spouses hate it. So there. what was the result?
The result was about evenly split between those who have carte blanche, whose spouses let them do whatever they want in that one room, and those who must make compromise to ensure domestic tranquility.
That sounds right. 50-50.
About 50-50. And there were, but it was really more like 38-38, because there were some people who are single.
Right.
Didn't have that. And I put that as an option. I said, hey, if you're single, you obviously have carte blanche. Right. There's nothing about that. This week's poll question is, have you used digital copy? You familiar with this? When you buy a Blu-ray DVD combo pack, very often now it'll come with something called digital copy.
Right.
Which is basically a DVD ROM. Of the digital file that you put on your computer, and then depending on various DRM, digital rights management situation, or platform compatibility, you can play it on your computer or maybe your iPad if you can put it into iTunes.
This was the Motion Pictures Association's idea of how to fight piracy.
Right.
Is give you a very severely crippled, limited digital copy that you could put on a device. And I bet you the answer, if you ask people, was have you used it more than once, would be no. But I bet you a lot of people have used it once. Actually, a surprisingly large number of people never use it at all.
Have never used it. Yeah. This was what I was interested in, to see if it was something that was a feature that people liked. And the vast majority of the responses so far are no.
Yeah. Almost all new Blu-ray discs have digital copy of them.
A lot of them do. Yeah, exactly.
There's a lot of extra room on these big giant discs.
But then there's the alternative, which is called ultraviolet, which basically gives you permission. It stores permission for you to stream a movie that you've already bought down from the internet. It's not the same quite as digital copy. And then there's the announcement this week by Walmart that announced a disc-to-digital program. You take in your library of DVDs or Blu-rays, and Walmart will basically, they won't digitize them, but they'll encode a permission for you to be able to download them through Vudu.
Oh, that's interesting.
For $2 a title for DVDs or $5 a title for Blu-rays.
It's a lot easier to steal it. Oh, I'm sorry. Did I say that?
No. Anyway, our streaming correspondent Barb Gonzalez is going to be writing about that on the site next week, and we're going to be doing a lot more coverage of streaming and stuff because it's very important. It's the future of home theater. I hope it not to the detriment or to the complete exclusion of physical media, because I still like physical media. You get the best quality. There's a sense of true ownership. Although the whole piracy, copyright protection, DRM issue, not letting you make copies and so on is still a problem. But, you know, there it is.
So you got some questions from your...
I do. I have one from Bob Spencer, who says, should a speaker system have separate subwoofers or subwoofers in the main front, right, and left towers?
Separate subwoofer or have it built in to the left and right.
Correct. Because there are quite a few speaker systems that do that build the subwoofer into the main front, right, and left towers.
Mm-hmm.
My answer to that question is I'd rather have a separate subwoofer. And the reason is that the best placement for the low frequencies is often different than the best placement for the main speakers. And if you have them integrated in there, then you don't have any choice.
You can't move it around. Yeah.
You can't move them around. Yeah. So... this is why I prefer to have separate subwoofers, and a couple of them in different places around the room, typically at the halfway points along the walls or the quarterway points along the walls, because that lets you even out the low-frequency distribution in the room and minimize the appearance of what are called nodes or peaks or valleys, essentially, areas in the room where certain frequencies cancel each other out or reinforce each other. And this is most problematic in the low frequencies. So thus, it's more important to be able to place your subwoofers independently of your main right and left speakers.
Scott Wilkinson is the online editor. Now you know why. Home Theater Magazine, HomeTheater.com. Go there and answer the current question. We've already told you what the voting is, but if you have to vote to see what the results are, what the latest results are, go to HomeTheater.com and answer the poll. Have you used digital copy? Scott, thanks for joining us. We'll talk to
you. Always a pleasure.
Next week. Don't forget, he has a great podcast if you like Home Theater. An hour or more of Home Theater Gab. It's called Home Theater Geeks, 1:30 p.m. Pacific, 4:30 Eastern every Monday on twit.tv. You can download it in audio and video after the fact. Who's your guest on Monday?
Ooh, my guest on Monday is Bob Schuline, who Bob Heil turned me on to, actually. Bob Schuline is another superb microphone designer, but he also worked for Shure, the microphone company, for many years, designing home theater products.
Interesting.
Long before even there was really a term home theater, before it was really popular. So we're going to hear a lot of interesting stuff from him. He's working on a system now called Immerse AV, or Immersav, which is basically binaural recording to give you a sense of 3D sound space from a pair of headphones. We're also going to talk about measuring headphones and how that works, dynamic range compression and popular music, all kinds of cool stuff. So please do tune in.
Tune in Monday. Thank you, Scott. Carl is in Lakewood, New York. Hi, Carl. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hey, Carl.
Yeah, Leo, how you doing?
I'm great. Welcome.
Yeah, thank you. It's a long-time listener.
Thank you.
And I have a question. I have an older HP computer, XP.
Carl, I hate to say it, but I hear the magic sound that says we've got a wrap for the news. Hang in there. Right after the top of the hour, we'll talk to you. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. A bump. Thank you, Scott. Picture this. You're on your way home after work. You check your iPhone, and you see... What do you do? Go back to work? Everything aside.
I don't have it here.
Don't hassle with going back to the office to log on.
Hey, I wanted to talk about something brand new. A big new sponsor called Big Commerce.
This is good. I'm glad I'm finally getting to talk about them. We actually we went out searching for a... Let me turn this down in the background. I'm tired of hearing myself. We went out searching for an e-commerce solution because we want to sell, as you probably know, we want to sell T-shirts online. And we looked at a lot of different e-commerce solutions. And, boy, from referrals, from people I talked to, the name Big Commerce just kept coming up again and again. BigCommerce.com. From web design to accounting to marketing, they do the whole thing. If you have an idea for a small business, Big Commerce is such a good solution for you. It lets you set up that small business with simple, easy-to-use tools. You do not have to be an expert. You don't have to be a web designer. You just have to have a good idea. If your company already is online and you're not generating sales through your online store, what a big opportunity you're missing. A lot of people said, you know, I need to add commerce. BigCommerce.com makes it easy to set up and run a professional online business. That's why they're the fastest growing e-commerce company in the world. And when I say the world, one of the reasons I like e-commerce is global. I know we have listeners all over the world. E-commerce is all over the world. And they have offered us something really great. Two free months, you can build a fully functional e-commerce store at absolutely no cost to you for 2 months. Look, if you've got a great idea and you've wondered, can I sell candles? Can I sell, you know, these hats? Can I make money selling online? Wouldn't it be 2 months is more than enough to know if you've got a good idea. Set up your free store today. They even help you promote it. BigCommerce.com. See this, hear about us on a radio or podcast. Click that icon in the upper right. And I want you to type in L-E-O. Okay? L-E-O. That's all you need to do. And you get two free month, 60 days. You don't even need to give them a credit card. They give you free setup and support. You design your store simply. You don't have to know anything about web design. Your store will look great. Your sales are guaranteed, and this is a great way to try it to see if you've got a great idea. BigCommerce.com. Anywhere in the world. This is more than a shopping cart. This is everything that you need. 2 months free to build your store. Use the offer code Leo. I'm just really happy to welcome them. Yes, we did set. What is our store address? It's not done yet. We said, you know what happened? I know what happened. Can I not say it? Lisa doesn't want to wear the cat suit. All right. We were going to do our own fulfillment, and we decided that's not a good idea. So we're setting up fulfillment, and then the store will be open. But I tell you, how long did it take you, Liz, to build it? Not very long. A couple hours. Very simple. From Premier Radio Network. But this was the solution we decided on, Big Commerce. And I got to tell you, boy, it couldn't be easier. I got a coffee. Thank you. Big Commerce. They need a jingle. If your commerce isn't big, you could make it big with Big Commerce. Yeah, the case is from XHIBIT, and they did do a nice monogram. XHIBT. And it looks like a Moleskine, which is great. Nice and tough. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. And we talk every week at this time about computers and the internet and cell phones and camcorders and MP3 players and home theater. And yeah, we're talking a lot about the iPad too. But I'm really glad Carl called in from Lakewood, New York, because he has a question that I think we get all the time. And I'm really happy to answer it. Hi, Carl.
Hi. How you doing?
I'm sorry I had to put you on hold, but you know, when the news calls, we've got to break.
That's right.
I don't want to get in trouble with a news director. Those guys and gals are tough.
Yeah.
So let's start over. Pretend I just picked you up. Hey, Carl, what can I do for you today?
Well, Leo, I have an old XP Hewlett-Packard PC, and it's been running really erratic lately.
Yeah.
It almost sounds like things are running in the background and
probably are.
Blowing up.
How long since you reinstalled the operating system?
Never.
Never. So you've been running that same operating system for 8 years?
Probably about 6 years.
Six years?
Even more.
Yeah. And so all computers get some bit rot from time to time. You install apps, take apps off. Leave things in that you forgot about. You probably installed stuff like security software or whatever that's running in the background. And you kind of forget about it. And every computer does this. It gets slower and slower and slower as more and more stuff accumulates.
Right.
Now, you've seen those ads, and I know that's what you're calling about on the doublemyspeed.com or whatever, right?
Right. Ads like that I've heard on different talk shows where they remotely log onto your computer and
right.
clean it up for you.
And I have to apologize in advance in case any of the stations carrying the show advertise for any of those companies. I don't mean to hurt your business or anything, but they're a complete, well, I shouldn't say that. They're mostly a waste of money.
Okay.
They're not scams, they're not viruses, but there's little that they can do remotely. So there's two different categories. There's one where you just run, you go online and you run some software, you pay them $50 and you run some software and they say, now you're all fixed. That's
right.
The least valuable.
That's what I was afraid of.
That's the least valuable. The ones that might be of some value is you pay and you get a tech who actually logs into your computer. That's like having somebody come to your house and fix it. And depending on the quality of the tech, that could be good or not. But I would submit that you can do everything that you would get them to do and do it better because you're sitting in front of your system. It really kind of depends on how much energy you want to put into this. My second recommendation would be to take it to a reputable shop if you know, if there's a Best Buy in town, the Geek Squad, or somebody like that, and let them do it. Because it, so this is a well-known problem, and the solution is well-known. Now, here's what those programs do. The ones that we just run some software do a few things. They do usually a virus scan. And it's true, you can do online virus scans. They aren't as good as a antivirus on your system, but they can often detect malware. Truth is, though, you already have some pretty good malware detection routines on your system from Microsoft itself. You may not really need these. And then sometimes they do a registry clean, which is of dubious merit. In fact, one of the big registry cleaning companies has a service like this. Registry cleaning, the idea of this is there's a big, giant, humongous file on all Windows systems called the registry. It's a file where systems, where programs store their preferences, their settings. Windows does too. The thing tends to get huge and bloated. It is one of the sources of slowdown. The problem is cleaning it effectively requires some aggressiveness. And the more aggressive you are with the registry, the more likely you are you're going to break stuff. So most registry cleaners err on the side of caution, which means they're useless. Because you don't want them to be aggressive. It's too risky. Registry cleaning isn't really of a huge value. Some people love it. And if you know what you're doing with a program like CCleaner, you can, in fact, get some benefit. But I think what you should do is what everybody should do. Every year or so, start over. Because the reason your system is slow is, as I mentioned, it just accumulates crud. Oh, it's spring clean. You need to do spring cleaning just as you do in your house. Little dust bunnies are gathering in your corners of your computer, and the best thing to do is to start over. No utility will do as well as these three steps. Back up your data. This is very important because I'm going to have you erase your entire hard drive. Say again?
Right. My son did install an external hard drive.
Good. So that'll make it easy for you to do the backup.
Okay.
So you can just drag. You can drag the home folder, the documents and settings folder over. That's the easiest kind of backup. Just get all. The main thing is to get my documents, my pictures, my music, you know, all the my folders over onto that external drive. You should do that anyway because a backup is, you know, drives just die sometimes, right?
Right.
So to drag everything over. Now you've made a backup. Now, I hope you have saved the disks that came with your HP computer. Sometimes they don't ship disks. HP is particularly notorious for this. They ask you to make a recovery disks, or they have a recovery partition. Do you know if you have system installed disks?
I think I have the recovery disk.
That would be the best. Now, when you put that recovery disk in, one of the options is to erase and start fresh. And the reason HP and other companies include a disk like that is for their own tech support people. When you ask them for tech support, frequently they'll say, okay, you run the recovery disk, because they want the system back to the state it was when you bought it, because they don't know what you've done. So this is what that's going to do. When you run that recovery, make sure you erase everything on the drive. I want to start fresh. The recovery disk will let you do that. It'll warn you. That's why you got to back up, because you're going to erase even your own data. And then format the drive and reinstall. Now you've got the HP back to the day you brought it home 6 years ago. And it should be just as fast as it was, barring any physical errors. It should be just as fast. This also has an advantage of kind of refreshing the hard drive, which over time, hard drive sectors get hard to read and so forth. So it's not a bad idea to do format the drive, repartition it, really start fresh. And put the system on there. Then, very important, you run Windows Update until there's no more to update.
Okay.
The first thing will happen is you'll install Service Pack 3, which will get you 90% of the way there, and then there may be a few more after that.
Okay.
Then you can judiciously reinstall the apps that you use. And this is an opportunity not to slow down the computer by installing a lot of stuff you don't use.
Okay.
So just install the stuff you know you need. Install as needed, I guess. There's also often a temptation to install 400 programs. There is a nice little a program called Nynite that will install kind of the basic stuff you need. All the multiple apps at once. And this is free, NINITE.com. And you can check off the browsers that you want and the tools that you need. But I would, again, be judicious. Don't just kind of check everything and say, I need everything. But this is nice because after you run all the updates, you can run this to get the basic apps back on there that you need, like Flash and you know, your PDF reader and things like that.
Right.
And then restore your data, and I bet you you'll be amazed at how much faster your computer will be. It'll be like it, like it's brand new.
Okay. You know, when I go to, you know, where they have the add and remove programs, I see a lot of updates on there for the different...
All the hot fixes that Microsoft sends you, all those Windows updates, those all show up there as hot fixes.
Yeah.
Don't take those off. Those are all needed. Those are the patches. I don't know why. I do know why Microsoft puts that in the add remove programs, because if a patch breaks things, you at least have the opportunity to back out of it.
Right.
But it is confusing for people. They'll, especially as a computer gets older, XP is a good example. There may be dozens of those in there. It's like, can I turn that off? It'd be nice if there were little switches that say hide hot fixes. So this is something that it's a pain. It's going to take, you know, this is a weekend job, just like cleaning the garage. But, you know, if you don't clean your garage ever, it accumulates stuff and you can't put a car in there. That's basically what's happened to XP. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Jim is our next caller in Texas at 8888 Ask Leo. Hi, Jim. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Yeah, I've been kind of a fan of yours ever since you were on ZDTV.
Wow, that goes back to 1998.
Yeah, Channel 191 on Dish Network.
That's right. Wow, I forgot about that, Channel 191. That's right, yeah.
I have a whole folder of bookmarks with your name on it. So.
Well, that's nice, Jim. I really appreciate that. And you found, obviously, you found the podcasts.
Well, I'm not doing a podcast. I'm watching you live.
Yeah. Well, now that you found that, we got about 30 shows with many old Tech TV stalwarts like Sarah Lane and Tom Merritt and Patrick Norton. We're kind of rebuilding the old Tech TV.
I was kind of a fan of Patrick Norton, too.
Yeah, well, he does a show on our network called This Week in Computer Hardware. He does a show that's a lot like the Screensavers called TechZilla, TechZilla.com. That's not my show, but I'm glad to promote it.
Well, I only ran across you about a week or two ago.
Welcome. You found us. We've been hiding in this little corner of the Internet.
I looked up Leo Laporte, and then some other stuff came up, and then I found out about this twit, so there you go.
There you go.
But the reason I'm calling, and it's a simple question, between your head and that screen on there is a white digital wall clock. I'm trying to find out about that wall clock.
You mean the one that has the time and the date and the temperature?
That is correct.
Yeah, you know, it's so funny because...
It never got up close enough to it that I could even see the brand name.
No, we don't really we don't show that. So for people who want to know, we do stream video of the radio show. It's got to be the most boring thing in the world to watching a guy talk on the radio, but that's what we do. And you can find that at twit.tv along with video of all our shows. We kind of do a lot. It's like a television station that's broadcasting all the time, making podcasts. So and you know, this is so funny because when we first set up the studio, my chief engineer at the time, Colleen Henry, who, by the way, has gone on to bigger and better things. She now runs streaming for Google, streaming video for Google. But she and I were shopping at Costco looking for a big screen TV and stuff to dress up the set. And I just walked by at Costco, walked by this clock. I said, oh, that'd be nice to have. It turns out to be the most popular item on my entire set. And people get mad at me if I take the clock down or block it in any way. I'm not sure why, but there you go. So they don't make it anymore. This is the bad news. It's a sky scan.
Oh, okay. Yeah, well, I have one of those, but I had the one with the wooden panels on.
Yeah, it's what they call an atomic clock, which really should be called a radio clock.
Uh-huh.
What these do is they have a radio receiver built in, and they get the time setting from WWV in Colorado, on Fort Collins. And so Skyscan makes a lot of different clocks. They stopped making the one that's behind me, unfortunately. However, I do have some good news. La Crosse makes a number of clocks like this now. La Crosse has kind of taken over the giant radio clock business, and they make a number of clocks that look just like this clock. in a variety of sizes. You'll find them all on Amazon, among other places. LACROSSE. You need to have radio reception. You know, I'm kind of devastated. I bought one of these. I bought an analog. I like pie face clocks. I bought a big 14-inch analog clock from LaCrosse that has a radio in it. But my apartment is a radio-free zone. I got no radio reception, so it won't set itself. So check with an AM radio just to see if you get radio reception, because if you don't, this won't work. But if you do, it's great.
Now is the one I have.
Yeah, well, there you go. It's exactly the same interface. It's a big time in big letters, then the month, the day, the date. Sorry?
That's like the bigger size. That's the reason.
Yeah, well, I think they still make, in fact, I think they make even bigger ones than this. Look, Walmart has them. Here's, you know, our chat room is going crazy right now with links to other places that make these. It is a fairly common style. I think what the truth is there's some Chinese company that's cranking these out, and people are just putting the works inside of, you know, whatever, wood and plastic, and making them bigger and littler. But I think that they're all the same works inside.
Well, the first one I had a remote to it, and you could do it outside temperature and inside.
Yeah, I remember those. So here's one that's even bigger than mine. It's a jumbo, giant digital atomic wall clock thermometer, 4.5 inches tall, numbers readable from 35 feet, $80 on Amazon. It's from American Science and Surplus. That is as close as you're going to get to the same clock. It's actually a little bigger than the one we use. In fact, somebody sent us this. I have it somewhere downstairs. It's too big. I can't fit it on the set. But if you want a big clock, there's one for you. And it's exactly the same. These are all the same. And that's why I think it's some Chinese company that cranks out these, and then various other companies buy them and put them inside different workings. So you'll find a lot of these out there. This is from a company called American Science and Surplus. But, you know, LaCrosse. American Science and Surplus. You know, I'm seeing it on Amazon. Somebody in the chat room gave me the link. It is huge. It's bigger than the one I have. 4.5 inch tall numbers. You could read them from down the road. We have one of those. Somebody sent me one. I have a bunch of clocks. I have a little bit of a clock fetish, I think. And I love, even my watches have always been radio clocks, because I love the, and maybe that's from being in radio so long that I like to know exactly down to the second what time it is. And it's funny because my daughter, who's 20 now, does not know how to read a pie face clock. She says, I've always had digital watches. Yeah, we learned it in third grade, but I don't remember. I don't know how. She has a hard time reading an analog clock. Is that what I, you know, it's, and nowadays nobody wears watches. They all have cell phones with the time, which is always accurate, by the way. So you don't, all of this is kind of anachronistic. it's just times have changed. And somebody in the chat room says, I bet she can't read a slide rule either. I think that's probably true. Of course she can't. Why would you need to? They still teach it in what is it, first or second or third grade? Second grade? You teach second grade and you teach it in second grade, right? And they have these like things where you set the hands and you got a little doggy and a kitty and and the kids learn it, right? I got bad news for you. Christine is in our studio. She's a second grade teacher. They're not going to be using that when they're getting it. They don't even remember. It's like they don't practice. But that's me. So she's saying, but you have giant clocks with big hands. And I do. I love them. We have them all over the studio. And, of course, there's still clock towers. How long? That will be a sad day for me when they start putting digital clocks in clock towers. That will be a very sad day for me. But you know what? I think it's kind of old hat. I was shocked that my 20-year-old daughter cannot read a pie face clock. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Tick, tick, tock, 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 tock.
What does the clock on the wall say?
Is that Mary Poppins? What is that?
What do little watches all say?
This portion of the Tech Guy Show brought to you by Carbonite Online Backup.
Tick, tick, tick,
tick, tock. For backup done right, automatic, continuous to the internet, use Carbonite. What does the clock on the wall say? Well, I'm glad they still teach in second grade the how to tell time. It's interesting because, of course, times are changing so rapidly now that schools really can't keep up. In fact, do you even want them to keep up? Probably not. Because it's like a moving target. I'm sure they're still teaching Microsoft Word in high schools. Is that a smart thing to teach people? Will they be using Microsoft Word when they get into the work world? I don't know. Excel? Probably. Excel, yeah. Will they have to tell time? My favorite thing in school is the leprechaun trap. That's all I'm saying. Do you guys do that? The leprechaun trap for St. Patrick's Day? Now, that's not really going to be useful. I'm just thinking, I don't think that's going to come up in the real world, but it's still, see, that's the thing. When you're teaching little kids, it's not really the skills that you're teaching them. Partly that's it, but you're also teaching them thinking and cognitive processes and rationality and making a plan. So I think the leprechaun trap is actually probably a very good project. And telling time is fine. It's just learning something. It's just molding the mush mind. Even if they never need to do it. I'm glad, though, that they aren't teaching bookbinding in school anymore. I think that probably wouldn't be a useful skill going forward. Barry, on line 5 from Pennsylvania, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Barry.
Hi, Leo. Thanks for taking my call.
My pleasure.
I'm a Apple World newbie.
Oh, how exciting.
Yeah. I've never owned an Apple of any kind.
Okay.
Except the kind you eat.
My favorite kind.
Right. But I'm considering purchasing one of the new iPads, an LTE version.
Oh, interesting.
Mostly because of a couple of uses I have of it, and the one I want to talk about is I understand that the LTE version has GPS capability.
That's correct.
Now, my question is it possible to use the GPS without having a data plan?
Yes.
All right, so how do you do that as far as the maps are concerned? Do you download all the maps?
Therein lies the problem. You're going to have to. There are GPS programs that have their own maps built in. So you're asking a very good question. So you want to use the iPad as a GPS.
All right.
You'll need the GPS radio. That is only in the version, the LTE version. There is geolocation in the Wi-Fi iPads, but it's not as good and certainly not something you'd want to navigate by. It uses Wi-Fi access points to triangulate them. So let's say, yeah, you want the LTE, but you don't want to pay the $10, $20, $30, $50 a month for LTE access. So if you used Google Maps for this purpose, you'd be out of luck because Google Maps, in fact, as you drive down the street, needs to download new maps as you go. It caches them a little bit, but you can't manually cache them. There are also, on the other side of it, for $100, TomTom and others make actual GPS apps that come with their own maps. That's why they're $100. So you wouldn't need to download them. My recommendation, though, it's absolutely my favorite GPS program on the iPad, is something called MotionX GPS Drive. And it has a very nice feature. There actually are a number of MotionX programs you'll see. MotionX GPS Drive is 99 cents, by the way, not $100. It uses Google Maps. It downloads the maps as you go. However, it has a very nice feature. You can cache the maps ahead of time. So when you're on Wi-Fi, you can download an entire region, store it on your iPad, and you're good to go. You won't need internet access the rest of the time. So MotionX is my recommendation. It's nice. It's 99 cents. Not expensive. You pay extra for things like turn-by-turn directions. But even then, I think it's $25 a year or something like that. It's not expensive. And it really is the best GPS I've ever used. The nice thing about downloading maps is they're always up to date.
All right. So it's MotionX.
MotionX. There are several MotionX apps. There is MotionX GPS Drive is the one you want. There's also MotionX GPS.
Okay.
But I presume you want to do driving, right?
Yes, that's the key. Particularly when I'm in a city area that I'm not familiar with,
right.
I'd like to have something that I can use there.
Yeah, I'm very happy. Actually, you know, I don't know if it's using Google Maps. I don't think it is Google Maps. Maybe it's OpenStreetMap. But these are very good quality maps. I've just been very happy with it. And, you know, when you have a 9.7-inch screen, which is bigger than, you know, any Garmin or Magellan or TomTom, it's great. The turn-by-turn directions are fantastic. I just think this is a very nice application. There's MotionX GPS, which you would use for walking, biking, geocaching. It's a plain old GPS. It also caches maps. I actually use MotionX GPS when I go to a foreign country. I'll download all the Paris maps onto my iPad, and then I have them, so I don't have to use any bandwidth, international bandwidth. And then the Motion GPX Drive is for turn-by-turn directions when you drive.
Yeah. Well, that makes a lot of sense. I knew there was some way to do that because I had heard you talk about it on other shows, but you never went into that much detail with it.
Well, that's what we're here for. I'm really glad you called and asked.
Okay, well, thank you, Leo.
Dear, thanks for the call. It's funny. There's so many things we can... That's why I have a talk show. I know I leave stuff out. I know I talk too fast sometimes, or I assume knowledge that you don't have. Please don't hesitate. That's why I give you the number 8888. Ask Leo. Say, Leo, what is it? I love those calls. This is what I'm here for, is to explain this. It's one of the reasons I love live talk radio. I found the best way to explain it is to let people ask questions. So I could go on and on, and I often do, about a topic, but really the best thing to do is for me to just answer your questions, and by doing so, we'll get everything answered. So let's keep going. John's in Gallup, New Mexico. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, John.
Hi, Leo. First of all, thanks for being here. You helped so many of us out.
Thank you for thanking me, and I'm glad you appreciate it. But I got to tell you, I just love doing this, and I don't do it for you. I do it because I am having a blast. I love talking about this stuff. I love thinking about it, and I'm just glad that I could be of some service. So thank you for thanking me.
Well, I don't know how you do it. You just amaze me. And every once in a while, I listen to another computer talk show, and I just can't stand it because you get these quick little answers that get ripped off in about 30 seconds.
I have to say there's a constant pressure from broadcasters. The problem with broadcasting is it's a mass appeal, right? And so they don't, I think for the most part, they think of technology talk as foreign language programming. They really would like it to be moving faster. And I thank all of our stations and the premier radio networks for letting me do it the way I do it, which is taking time. I know we don't answer as many calls as I'd like to, but sometimes you just have to do that. I want to make sure we get the question answered.
Yeah,
so,
I appreciate that.
So ask your question.
Okay, I have a quick question that leads to a bigger question, and then I have two great iPhone apps to recommend.
Perfect.
So the quick question is, I have an iMac, a 27-incher. I have a Lion. Everything's updated. I have an Epson Perfection 4490 photo scanner.
Love those scanners.
I used to
love
be
them.
Able to do it before. It's a beautiful flatbed. I used to be able to put on seven small pictures, scan them, they'd all go into individual files. Now, because the Lion Epson has not updated the drivers, and I can't do that, all I can do is I can scan the whole bed and then do, clip them out.
And do it by hand. Yeah, I remember I had that Epson software that was smart and would just divide it up. Hang on, John. Let me see if I can find an answer for that. 8888 Ask Leo. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hang on. I'm lost. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. We were talking about caching map data ahead of time while you're on Wi-Fi so you don't use expensive 3G bandwidth when you're international, or you don't have to pay for 3G on your 3G iPad. The chat room pointed out that on Android, you can pre-cache maps on Google Maps. So there is a way to do that. It's a Labs feature, so you have to enable the Labs feature, and it then will download the maps on Google Maps. But it only does it on Android. There are no lab features available on iOS. You know, Apple is absolutely going to abandon Google at some point. They've basically said this. They no longer use Google Maps in iPhoto. They use OpenStreetMaps. I wouldn't be surprised at all. In fact, one of the things that came up when Apple got accused of, do you remember a few months ago, Apple got a little bit of trouble because the iOS devices were apparently saving your location information and then uploading it to Apple's servers. Turned out Apple was doing something similar to what Google had been doing and gotten a little bit of trouble for, which was kind of making maps. And Apple said, well, yeah, this is for a future feature. We want to have traffic information. And I think it's pretty clear Apple, given its acquisitions and these little hints, is going to put its own maps on iOS at some point. In fact, frankly, Apple seems to hate Google nowadays. They used to be very close partners. I think Apple wants to replace all the Google features, including Google Search, on iOS. I think it's one of the reasons that Siri is so important for Apple's long-term strategy. In any event, we were talking to John in Gallup, New Mexico. John has a good question. And one thing the chat room said, John, is you should check your Epson scanner software. Apple has apparently recently updated the software, so maybe they've made it so it works with Lion now. He had scanner software that did something very cool. He'd use his Epson Perfection scanner to scan multiple images, and the scanner would sense where the individual images were and chop them up. Give you, if there's seven pictures on a page, it would turn out seven files, each with an image. It was very smart about doing that. I've used that feature myself.
The only thing they've updated is the uninstaller. That's the only thing that runs with
10.7. Isn't that nice? Yeah. So that's up to Epson, of course, to do, and I don't know why they haven't updated that. Sometimes it takes longer to do so.
But that leads me to a bigger question. And I'm using Lion, which I upgraded from Snow Leopard, which I upgraded from Leopard, which I upgraded from Panther, which I've upgraded from Jaguar, I think, which I upgraded from Tiger.
Wow, you've gone through all of the big cats.
Yeah, and I started at 10.7 with an Apple IIe, or 7.6. And so even though now my iMac is running pretty well, I get beach balls, I got old PPC software that won't work on Lion.
Right.
Is there any way, and I've downloaded tons of apps and stuff. I've downloaded lots of stuff I don't have the original disk from. Is there any way I can clean this all out? I use Onyx every once in a while to clean out, you know, some caches and stuff. But is there any way I can clean out all this old stuff easily without, you know, without breaking what I am doing?
Yeah, that's the tricky part, breaking what you're doing. You know, of course, you could do a what they call a clean system install where you move the old system folder to a previous system. You've probably done this from time to time, and then you get a whole new system folder. Yeah. All your preferences, all your cached files, all that stuff gets moved into this old folder, and things break, but you have the old folder, and you go digging around and find the file you need and move it back. It's really a pain. I don't actually recommend it. You're kind of, you know, the good news about Macintosh in general is you can do what you just described. If somebody did that on Windows, started with Windows 95, then upgraded to 98, then the ME, then XP, then Vista, then Windows 7, they would have a non-functioning machine for sure. You know, it's not even recommended to go from one version of Windows to the next without a reinstall, a clean install.
Yeah.
On the other hand, Apples do that pretty well. You're right, no PowerPC software works anymore, although usually OS X will say, well, I'm sorry, I can't run this. It won't just beach ball on you. But I do think that the beach balling is a symptom, perhaps, of older stuff lying around and trying to run and so forth.
Any other software that I could do to maybe try to speed it up a little bit to clean up some things? I mean, I really fix permissions and that kind of stuff and run Onyx. But is there anything else I can do to just try to clean out things?
No, that's pretty much it. That's pretty much it. I mean, short of a clean install, and I understand you don't want to do that because you don't have original app disks for some of your apps.
Right.
You know, they just CCleaner just released a version for the Mac. That's interesting. I don't know. CCleaner is a well-known Windows registry cleaner. Good company. They've been around for a while. I don't particularly recommend registry cleaning on Windows. There is no registry on the Mac, so I don't know what CCleaner would do on the Mac. But CCleaner for the Mac is now in the App Store. Let's see what it does. I don't know what it does. I can't even imagine what it does. They don't seem to be very very clear about what it does either. CCleaner, the most popular optimization and cleaning tool, is now available for your Apple. Protecting your privacy online, reclaiming your disk space, and making your computer faster, more secure. That sounds like snake oil to me. Probably all it's doing is what Onyx does for free, which is clears the cache files and the logs and that kind of thing, the temp files.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well,
I don't have a good answer for you, John. I mean, the best thing to do would be start fresh.
Yeah. Now, if I did do that, then I would take all the applications, I'd delete all the ones that were PPC, and I can see the list. No, I can do that. I can find out which those are.
Yeah.
But then, like, I'd have to transfer over all my libraries and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
And then, you know, I'd still be transferring over all kinds of preferences and things that I won't be using.
Maybe causing problems, exactly. So the best thing to do would be to do it judiciously and slowly. You know, you may be also getting beached, but it sounds like a pretty old Mac, right?
No, it's an iMac. It's a year old, and it's 27-inch. It's i5.
Yeah, you shouldn't. You know, I don't get a lot of beach balls. Is there any one program that you're getting a lot of? Beach balling is the Mac version of stalling. It just, you know, spins and spins.
Well, in an example, one of the things I do quite often, if I, let's just say I buy something online and I get a receipt in my email, and then what I want to do is print out the receipt, but I don't want to have three or four pages. What I'll do is I'll take a screenshot with Command-Control-4, highlight just the part.
Yeah.
Then I go ahead and I open up Preview, and I create the file from the clipboard, and then I go ahead and try to print it,
That should work fine. Yeah, I would reinstall your printer, because that's a very natural, easy, straightforward thing to do.
But then I go ahead and I try to delete that screenshot from Preview.
Yeah.
And it's taken like 2-3 seconds.
You know what, John? I think your hard drive is starting to go. That might be the real truth of it. A lot of times, and this is Mac or PC, look, hard drives are moving parts. They're probably the last moving part in most computers. And as with any moving part, you can have problems. The problem you get most often with hard drives is sectors that are difficult to read. Now, what happens is the computer tries to read it and slows things down as it tries and tries and tries. And it sounds like it's probably able to do so finally, although occasionally it may crash because it can't read those files. And so that's a very common source of problems on both Windows and Mac. Hard to diagnose. It looks like something's wrong with this program or something's stuck. And it could just simply be that the operating system's trying like the dickens to read that file and just can't, and eventually does and then goes on. So I would, even though your computer's only a year old, you know, hard drives fail at any time. And I wish there were a SpinRite for the Mac I could recommend, because that's a great program for reconditioning a hard drive. Activity monitor, Kevin's suggesting in our chat room, a good way to monitor what's going on during those beach balls, what's eating CPU cycles. That's a tricky one. It sounds like there's something wrong. You shouldn't be getting lots of beach balls. You really shouldn't. I have a very similar Mac, year-old 27-inch iMac, and I never get beach balls. Well, a good day to you, Leo Laporte here, the tech guy, and it's time to talk about computers, the internet, cell phones, camcorders, MP3 players, and the iPad. 8888-ASK-LEO, that's the number, 888-827-5536. Toll-free from anywhere in the U.S. If you're outside the U.S., you can also call via Skype to that toll-free number. It shouldn't cost you anything. Skype out. 8888-ASK-LEO. Leo, the chat room is available through our website, as is the phone number and notes about every show, 857 shows in total. We also have links to the live video and all of that. TechGuyLabs.com. TechGuyLabs.com. Steve in Tustin, California. You're next. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Steve.
Hey, Leo. Thanks for taking my call.
I'm very excited for you. You're about to take a very exciting trip.
Yeah, we're headed for China in the next couple of weeks, and my question to you was, a friend mentioned a service called ExpressVPN, mm-hmm. called ExpressVPN.info, mm-hmm. and they said that you could actually use that to get on to sites, because some of the sites that we want to go, I think even like Blogger blogspot.com or something.
Blogspot
like that.
Is often blocked. Facebook, Twitter. It just depends. They call it the Great Firewall of China. And the Chinese government is very afraid of the internet. They understand that they want to, you know, people to use it because the internet is an economic engine in many countries and absolutely in China as well. But at the same time, they're afraid of their own people. It's a totalitarian government. And what they're really afraid of is that people will learn something about the free world or about some of the rebellions and uprisings. I was in China a few years ago, and there was an uprising going on in Western China. And it's interesting because you'd be in a hotel, and I was mostly in Western hotels, watching CNN, international CNN, and it would just go dark all of a sudden and then come back a couple of minutes later. And what it was is they were doing a story about the uprisings, and the Chinese government would just black it out. And people in China just, it's business as usual. When I came to China, when this was, I think, 2009, I could tweet. I could post on Facebook. By the time I left 2 weeks later, I couldn't. They turned it off. And so it comes and goes. Now, what's interesting is there are ways around this. There are well-known ways around it. And the elites in China, the college-educated, the intellectuals, all know how to get around it. And I believe the Chinese government even looks the other way. You know, if you want to be an internet cafe in China, you have to have a government permit and install surveillance stuff. They're very careful about what you can do. And yet, I believe they look the other way. And the way people, the elites, get to the full internet in China is via these kinds of VPNs, proxy servers, that allow them to surf to a safe address, an unblocked address, and then from that unblocked address go out to the outside world. And that's what a VPN will let you do.
Yeah, that's what this server supposedly is supposed to do. It's, you know, it's called ExpressVPN, but I've never used it. They even said you could actually use it like an unsecure Wi-Fi, you know, area.
Yeah, all VPNs are the same. They basically give you an encrypted tunnel from your computer. So what happens is you go from your computer, instead of going to Google.com, you go to this ExpressVPN site, and then from there you go to Google.com. And your transaction is in an encrypted tunnel up to the point where you go out onto the public net. That presumably allows you to go outside of China without the Chinese government knowing what you're doing and then going on. I do not recommend this.
Oh, you don't?
Well, here's why. It's obvious that you're doing it.
Okay.
They can see you going to a VPN. Do you really want to antagonize Chinese security officials?
Not really.
You're a tourist, right? You're going there as a tourist, right?
Right.
Yeah, my suggestion is do not act in any way as if you're trying to hide something. Unless you want to stay there for a little longer than your original plans.
No, not really. That's for sure.
I mean, how important is it that you go to Facebook? Not that important. So I think there are other ways, and this is what I found. There are other ways to do this without raising the getting the attention of the Chinese government. Our chat room has posted a link, which I will put in the show notes, on how to travel safely in China. And I would absolutely read this.
Yeah, that would be good.
Yeah, it's from the travel.state.gov. You could probably get there directly. It's just information from the Chinese consulate about, you know, what to do, what not to do. I think, look, you're a guest in this country. It's a wonderful country. The people are wonderful. You're going to love it. It's going to be the time of your life, the best food you've ever eaten. And I ain't talking chow mein. I mean, really amazing cuisine. Very interesting people. It's a wonderful country, and I think you're going to have a great time. I would not suggest trying to go around governmental restrictions of any kind. Why do that? Now, here's how I did still want to post my trip. I want to put pictures up. You can't get to Flickr in China. You can't get to Facebook. You can't get to Google+. So, but I still wanted to do that. So I used other solutions that were not so sneaky. For instance, there's a great website called Posterous. Twitter just bought this company, posterous.com. And what they do is they allow you to email pictures, videos, blog posts, and then redirect them to where you want them to go. Now, the Chinese government is not blocking email.
Okay.
They can't. And if you don't need to encrypt it. It's, you're not. I presume you're not sending information about rocket systems out to the West.
No. It would just be, for the trip.
Yeah, so. Act transparently. So use email to mail these pictures to Posterous. This is what I do. And let Posterous then put it on YouTube, Flickr, MySpace, Foursquare, wherever, Facebook, wherever you want them to go, so that your friends and family can see the pictures of your great time in China. This is a completely safe way to do it.
And then one other question, though. I have a little small business where I have to upload to an FTP site. It's actually my personal web space.
Yeah, that'll probably be blocked. Problem? Yeah, that probably will be blocked. Just think, if you think about it, they just want, the record industry would like to do this here in the United States. They would like to control you from doing things that you want to do that they don't, the Chinese government doesn't want you to do. In the right. U.S., it's piracy. So-called, I hate to even use the word piracy. It's it's copyright violation. In China, it's planning dissent.
Yeah. Exactly.
My strong recommendation is not to act in any sneaky fashion or try to encrypt your data or anything like that. Just just do it normally. Now, if you need to upload files, Dropbox will probably work fine.
Because I do have a Dropbox. So.
Yeah, I think that the problem is you don't know what they're blocking from day to day.
That's kind of why, I knew you traveled, and I think I'd look back in your shows at Posterous. And
I love Posterous. I also posted audio messages via Audioboo. That wasn't blocked. You're bringing a smartphone?
I'm not going to be using it, actually, because, I have T-Mobile. And
it's expensive.
$360 a month.
Yeah, it's expensive.
Or $360 a minute, $360 a minute. Yeah.
You'll have Wi-Fi in every hotel.
Right.
I would just say obey the rules.
Okay.
Don't attempt to get around them. A VPN is not a bad idea in the U.S. where you want secure internet access in an open Wi-Fi access spot or a hotel. Those are fine. And I use Hotspot VPN, but I think ExpressVPN is just fine.
Okay.
I just don't think it's a good idea to try to end around the Chinese government. Not because, first of all, you're in their country, follow their rules, but also I think it's a bad idea to attract attention like that. They will know you're using a VPN.
Okay, that's great advice. I'm going to talk about that.
And we have I'll put this in the show notes too at techguylabs.com. There's a Wikipedia, a regularly updated Wikipedia article on what is blocked right now in China. Before we go any further, though, I'd like to talk about the post office. Speaking of government bureaucracies, the Postal Service is still one of the best deals in the world, isn't it? I mean, it's amazing. You could put, what is it? I don't even know what it is anymore because I use stamps.com. You put a 47-cent stamp on a thing and it gets hand-delivered to your person. That's amazing. You put it in a box and a couple of days later it arrives. It's amazing. The problem is they're closing post offices. They're cutting back on hours. And waiting in line for postage is just kind of a waste of time. So I have the post office at my desk with stamps.com, and I love stamps.com. I want you to visit the site, stamps.com. This is a USB postal scale. So whatever I'm going to mail, I don't care if it's a package, a letter, whatever, I plop it on the scale, fire up stamps.com, press print. They print the postage out, completely official U.S. postage, and there's some advantages. You can mail any size package. You don't have to put it in the mailbox. They will come and get it. Free pickup, either your daily mail carrier pickup, or you can call them for schedule free pickup, free. So they come, if it's a giant package, whatever, if you're an Amazon seller or an eBay seller, you got to have this. If you mail internationally, this is great. I don't know if you've ever tried to mail anything internationally, but you have to go to the post office. It's a big, elaborate process. Stamps.com does it all. You tell it where you're going to send it. It fills out all the forms, prints out the right postage. It does the whole thing. You even get discounts you cannot get at the post office. The post office wants you to use stamps.com. It saves them money. So they give you significant discounts on priority mail and express mail. Stamps.com is amazing. Saves you time, saves you money. And right now, if you go to stamps.com, I've got a very good deal for you. Only I have this. So go to stamps.com. Let me pull it up real quick here. Let me spell it right first. stamps.com. You know how to spell stamps. I just don't know how to spell it. And you'll see when you go right to stamps.com, initially there's an $80 offer. But if you click the radio microphone in the upper right and use the offer code TECHGUY, they're going to bump that offer to $110 no-risk trial. Includes the scale free and $55 postage. And a one-month trial. You only pay shipping and handling, including the scale. It's really a great deal. $55 postage and the 5-pound digital scale. Give it a try. Stamps.com. Remember the offer code, though. Tech Guy. Stamps.com. I love it. You know what? Zephyr's saying, I want a commemorative Leo stamp. They have Stamps.com has a branch that will print postage with your pictures. Legal postage with stamps with your... So I have Leo stamps somewhere. They're hysterical. So you can get commemorative Leo stamps if you want. You can put your own picture on them. I got to find them. I don't remember where I put them. So cool. That's a division of stamps. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888. Ask Leo. That's the phone number. We're talking high tech. And, of course, the new iPad. A lot of people want to know, should I buy the new iPad? The tough one, if you've never bought an iPad, yes. And I think the iPad, and you've heard me recommend it for a lot of people who are uncomfortable with computers. It's too complicated. I gave Jennifer a laptop years ago. It's not that she's not a smart person and can't figure out how to use it. No problem. She used it. She got an email and all this stuff, but it was a little confusing to her. So I gave her an iPad, one, I think it was my hand-me-down when I got the iPad 2, and she never uses a laptop again. She uses her iPad all the time because for what she's doing, surfing, email, that kind of thing, it's exactly what she wants. She types on the screen. And so I got two iPads, one for me and one for her, and I think she's very excited because if you look at magazines on the iPad, you will see immediately the difference in this screen is stunning. Do you ever do Kindle, for instance? It is so easy to read. The text is so crisp. I just love it. Now, a couple of things to keep in mind. It is a very glossy screen, so it's easy to have reflections on this thing that make it difficult to read. You'll have to kind of angle it around. Apple likes the glossy screen, I think, because colors feel and look richer. You know, in order to make a screen not glossy, you basically have to haze it up a little bit. You have to kind of put something on the surface that doesn't reflect, and that dims it. So I agree that if you can do it in an area where you don't have reflections, it's the best to have a glossy screen. But some people really hate it. One of the nice things about an iPad compared to a Kindle, it's got backlight, so you can read in the dark. Some people say that bothers their eyes. The Kindle, the e-ink readers, same thing with the Nook, need a light shined on them, just like a real book. This you can read... in the dark. I wouldn't recommend it at the beach. It's not great in sunlight, but it's not unusable. Again, it's mostly about the glare, and you have to just angle it so that you don't have reflections in there. The high-res screen is great for movies, I got to say. And most of the apps, by the way, all of the Apple apps and many of the other third-party apps like Netflix are updated now to use this screen, so you get high-def pictures, high-def video. It looks good. If you've got an iPad 2, if you can sell your iPad 2, go to somewhere like Gazelle or, you know, sell it to a friend or, you know, somehow get your money out, get a few hundred bucks out of it, I would absolutely upgrade to iPad 3. I think it is the screen alone is a significant jump. And I love the camera, believe it or not. I know you look dorky holding up a tablet to your face and taking pictures, but the images are great. So let's talk some more about travel. Brad is on the line from Orange County, California, listening to the great KFI. Hi, Brad. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, Leo. How are you?
Fantastic. Thanks for calling.
okay, we're taking a family trip, London, Paris, Rome, and want an easy camera that takes great pictures.
How important is compactness?
Very important.
You want a tiny one.
Yeah, but we have those little Nikon pocket ones, and they don't take that great a picture.
Yeah. Well, there's a direct trade-off. You know, the smaller the camera, the smaller the chip that picks up the image in the camera, the sensor. And the smaller the sensor, the lower quality the image. That's why those big DSLRs like the Nikon D4 or the Canon 5D, they're huge and heavy, and they have big sensors, and they give you the best quality images. They also have really big lenses that weigh a lot, too. All of that contributes to better images. So there's a direct correlation between size and image quality. However, there are some small cameras that really give you great results. I'm going to give you a few, and you might want to go to a camera store and try them out. The smallest camera that gives you decent images is the Canon PowerShot S100.
Okay.
This is one of the Canon ELF, series. So when you turn it off, the lens retracts, and it would fit in your shirt pocket easily.
And battery life and all that?
Excellent battery life. Very good video, which I think is important. 12 megapixels, high quality, 5x zoom. It's slightly wide angle, which is good because one of the things you're going to want to do, you're going to get to the Colosseum and you're going to want to shoot, the expanse. You want something that's slightly wide angle. So when the lens is all the way, in the widest mode possible, you'll be able to get the whole Colosseum. It's 24 millimeters. But you can then zoom in and get details. So this is a great little compact camera. It's around $400. It's pricey. It's the latest, greatest. If you want to save some money, the S95, its predecessor, is pretty good as well. Panasonic also makes some excellent compact cameras. The LX5 is just fantastic. A little more bulky than the Canon ELF. This is a camera that a lot of pros carry. Pros also don't want to carry a big, heavy camera all the time, so they'll frequently carry a small, compact camera so when they head out into the world, they don't have to bring that big 4D body with them. And the Lumix LX5 is a very popular choice among pros.
Excellent. Does it have video?
It has video, too. All of the good point-and-shoots now have high-def video cameras. And I think that's important. You don't want to, who buys a camcorder anymore? You've got your smartphone and then your camera have great video. And you're taking high-def shots. You may say, well, it's kind of hard to hold, but you don't want to take more than 10 seconds at a time anyway. In fact, here's a little tip. One of my favorite photographers, Ray Maxwell, told me this, and it's an absolutely great tip. A lot of times people try to tell stories with video, when they're out in the field. And this is a professional skill. It's hard to do. It takes a lot of editing afterwards. You have to think about what you're shooting ahead of time. My suggestion is treat your video just as you would your stills. Take pictures, small, short-second bursts, just, every once in a while, every 10 minutes, just a little burst here, a little burst there. And then when you get home, instead of trying to elaborately edit a story, just put them together as a montage of video clips. You'll be surprised at how compelling it is. You'll love it. I do this all the time now, put a little music behind it. Now you have a slideshow. You can include the stills if you want as well. Don't feel like you have to shoot a movie. You're not shooting a feature film. You just little. It's like a photo album with video clips, and I just love it. And it's very easy to do.
Hey, a side question: were our iPads with 3G and our iPhones all work over there?
Yeah, they will, but at a cost. Remember, you're going to be using roaming data. So if you have AT&T, do you have Verizon or AT&T?
AT&T.
Good. Yeah, Verizon won't. But if you have AT&T, actually the Verizon iPhone will, but the Verizon iPad won't. If you have AT&T, call them up and say, I want an international data plan. And then monitor your use carefully, but you can get it down to about $1 a megabyte, I think. And I tell you, when I travel, having an international data plan on my iPhone is a very good thing. You can use the maps to get around. I use the Zagat guide to find restaurants and hotels. Little things that you wouldn't expect can be very handy. The ability to text message kids, that kind of thing. So call about an international plan, and I would recommend that. Have a great time. Thanks to Kyle Benham, our musical director, who finds such great songs and puts together a playlist at the end of each show. He posts that Spotify playlist on Google Plus. Just follow him, K-Y-L-E space B-E-N-H-A-M, or you'll find the link on our show notes at the end of each show at techguylabs.com. Look for the Saturday Show, episode 857. Who was that, Kyle? That was great.
Marion Call.
Marion Call. And I liked what she was saying. It's exactly it. The cool kids, you remember this in high school, the way you're cool, it's cool. You don't show enthusiasm. That's so uncool to be excited about something. And geeks and nerds, we get enthusiastic. Sometimes about the strangest subjects, like comic books or space travel or computer chips. And it's that enthusiasm that makes us perhaps not cool, but it's worth it. It's worth it because we take a joy in this stuff and we get to enjoy ourselves. So there's no need to be cool here, kids. You're here with the geeks. Hee-wa in Portland, Maine. Hi, hee-wa. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Good afternoon, Leo. Thanks for taking my call.
I love your name.
Thank you.
You don't go, hee-wa, or do you?
Yeah, sometimes my friends do that. Why not?
Why not? Well, it's nice to meet you. What can I do for you?
Yeah, I've been having phone problems for a while now. I've been with T-Mobile for a year and a half, but I really dislike the types of phone they have. So I've been getting unlocked phones from AT&T, but I can't seem to get 3G. All I have is Edge.
Yeah, this can be very frustrating. For instance, I got the Samsung Galaxy Note, which I love. Now, AT&T sells their version, but I wanted it before AT&T started selling it, so I got the unlocked GSM version, the European version. And there's actually hardware features in this that I prefer to the AT&T version. I put a T-Mobile SIM in. One of the nice things about GSM phones in general, if you get an unlocked one, you can use a SIM card. It's a little chip from either one of the GSM carriers in the U.S., which is AT&T or T-Mobile. Put it in there, and it becomes a T-Mobile phone or an AT&T phone. And, you know, you pay more for an unlocked phone, but you get more choices. So I do what you do, too, Iwa. Unfortunately, I learned this to my chagrin, the radios in some of these European phones may not be compatible with the radios in the U.S. So this Galaxy Note was not getting 3G on T-Mobile. It didn't have the right bandwidth, the right band frequencies. It could only get Edge on T-Mobile. The good news was I got an AT&T SIM and put the AT&T SIM in. It does not support the HSPA Plus frequency for AT&T, but at least it supports the HSPA. Actually, it does support HSPA Plus, just not LTE. So I am able to get 3G on this. So it really comes down to, in that Vivid, and I'm not sure on the Vivid, I'd have to look. It comes down to what bands the unlocked Vivid. Did you get a European version?
Be honest, I'm not sure. I just got an ACC Vivid, and I had to do something with a VPN.
So it's the APN. You have to change the access point information. You want to make sure that the access point information is correct. Are you trying to use it on AT&T or T-Mobile?
T-Mobile.
And that's the one that you're not getting 3G, huh?
Correct.
Okay, so the issue on that is it has to have, I believe, 1700 and 2100 megahertz for 3G on T-Mobile. And that's the issue. It does not have the 1700 megahertz data band for 3G on T-Mobile. So in other words, the phone is hardware incapable. It doesn't have the right frequencies.
Oh, I see.
So there's no software fix for this. You're stuck. Now, I think you probably, I'm just looking, and I'm at phonearena.com and looking at the specs for the Vivid. This is where, you know, and I've done the same thing, Hiwana, and I was kind of embarrassed when I bought the Note, and I realized, oh, shoot, I can't use this on T-Mobile. I can't use 3G. So it's a very good idea before you get a phone out from anybody but the carrier, if you're not getting it from the mobile carrier, to verify that it has the proper frequencies. In this case, there are sites like Phone Arena that you can go to and you can check. If you're buying it from a vendor, they should list somewhere which frequencies. What you need to do, though, is then check and see what carrier you want to use it on and what frequencies they need, and then compare. So I'm looking in the technology section at Phone Arena at which bands, and it does not support the 1700 megahertz band that T-Mobile requires. You could use it, modify the APN, have it point to singular, and use it on AT&T, perhaps. But you can't use it on T-Mobile. Now, what I did is I put a AT&T SIM in, and I modified the APN, and I am getting HSPA Plus on my Galaxy Note. Thank goodness. I didn't want to use it on it. I wanted to use it on T-Mobile. So, short of getting another phone, you're kind of stuck. Now, they're sending me a link. AT&T Samsung Galaxy Note now works on T-Mobile 4G. That's the problem. It's the AT&T version, not the unlocked version that I got. So, in this case, the radio was there, but they had to do some hacking on the software, on the baseband software to make it work. That's not going to fix a phone that physically doesn't have that frequency. Alan in West L.A. Hi, Alan. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Leo Laporte, good to talk to you once again.
It's nice to talk to you, Alan. What can I do for you?
Here's my situation. It's time for me to upgrade my phone. My wife did it first. She got herself a nice Droid and loves it. She doesn't trust me with a Droid. She says my face is buried in high tech all the time anyway.
So she makes you have a dumb phone, a feature phone, because otherwise she's afraid you wouldn't look at her at dinner.
That's basically what it comes down to.
She's right. She's smart. Right.
She's probably right.
My kids hate me. They say, Dad, put it away. Put it away. You think it'd be the other way around.
I understand. So here's my question. I want to upgrade the phone, and the other factor is that, and I talked to you a few weeks ago, that I'm one of those people who had the privilege of doing some of the relief work in Japan after the tsunami.
Oh, yes. Yes, Alan.
Yeah, so I will be traveling there once again. So I want a phone that I could use there or at least have it for emergencies. My question is, what can I get her in terms of, like, are BlackBerrys an option or something like that worth considering? Or should I just tell my wife, you know what? The world has changed, and I promise to behave myself. I should probably just go with the Droid or iPhone.
Well, first of all, the Japanese market is very, very different, as you probably already know, having been there.
Right. Very much so.
Their phones are, for one thing, because space is so constrained there, many people in Japan, I'm told, I have no idea, many people in Japan don't have personal computers. They have smartphones. That's their computer.
Uh-huh.
And so smartphones in Japan do a lot more and are very much more elaborate than they are here in the States, and they're completely incompatible with the States' networks.
Of course.
Yeah. Now, you can use an iPhone in Japan, and you probably can use an Android in Japan. I am not an expert on this. Let me see if I can get somebody in the chat room to help me out. So hang on, Alan. We'll see what we can do here. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, the Gizwiz, is coming up. Big in Japan. Big in Japan. Really big in Japan. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Alan's going to Japan to help out with tsunami relief. And he's wondering about phones. Everybody, I'm told in the chat room, the iPhone is huge in Japan. Very, very popular. So that's good news. That means you'd be able to use an iPhone. If you get it from Verizon, you're going to have to activate the international plan. They'll give you a SIM.
Okay.
If you get it from AT&T, I think it should work. But what I would recommend, anybody who goes overseas with a smartphone, is get an international data plan, because data roaming is very expensive.
Got it. In general, are things like BlackBerries and those kinds of phones, are they pretty much becoming passe? Should they really?
Yeah, don't get a BlackBerry. Is that your wife's idea? She wants to torture you. Do not get a BlackBerry. I don't know why anybody would buy a BlackBerry anymore. Who knows how long RIM's going to be around.
Got it. Got it. So just hold out for the good stuff is basically what you're telling me.
Android is fine. I'm an Android fan, but I think if it's your first smartphone, either an iPhone or a Windows mobile phone, probably a better choice than Android. And if you're going to Japan, I think an iPhone is the way to go.
Much appreciate your advice. Thank you, sir.
Thank you for calling. I appreciate it, Alan. Have a great trip. Thank you for helping out there. Hey, let's say hi to this guy. This guy on the left of the microphone, Mr. Dick DiBartolo, Mad Magazine's maddest writer. We call him the Giz Whiz because he's a gadget hound and joins us every week to give us a great gadget. Hello, Dickie D.
Leo, how you doing, pal?
Now, Dick, I got to tell you something about Dick.
Yes.
He's the ultimate in urbanite. Grew up, lived his whole life in the New York area, first in Brooklyn, now in Manhattan. He does not own a car. He, you know, if it's not concrete, he doesn't know how to walk on it. But for some reason, somehow, Sony got him to go to Sedona, Arizona.
Well, because it was only for 2 days. They said, "Do you want to go to Sedona, Arizona?" I said, "How long? How fast can I be back?"
Did you get dizzy with all of the big sky?
Well, it was amazing. Who knew that you could go out and look up and see real stars?
And then you had to get up at 6 a.m. every morning. Dick is the ultimate in late risers.
I know. Thank goodness the time was in my favor. At least it was 9 o'clock New York time.
Yeah.
But it really was an amazing trip.
So what were they doing? They were showing off a new camera.
You know, it was very clever. They brought out 18 reporters, and they, you know, normally they bore you to tears on these things. They put out a table of all their new cameras and digital binoculars and camcorders. And they just said, we're going on several different expeditions. Just take cameras, take whatever you want, go along. So
you took beautiful pictures. Which camera did you use?
Leo, this is a brand new CyberShot that's coming out in May. It's going to be the HX30V.
Mm, gorgeous.
And it's a 20-time optical zoom, and then it goes to 40 digital. And I said to the guy handing out the cameras, Drew Temple, I said, "Digital, Drew, come on, who does digital?" And they said, "Sony has a way that instead of just blowing up pixels, a little computer in there keeps adding more pixels to by analyzing what the shot is already, so you don't get a blown out picture.
It doesn't get all grainy and pixelated.
Yes, exactly. Once you go past the 20-time optical zoom.
Did you do any of these shots? I'm looking at your smug mug.
These are all my shots.
Yeah. Did you do any of these with the digital zoom?
No, I did not. I just stayed.
These are all optical. Generally, we don't recommend it. Wow. Yeah. Look at that duck. Have you ever seen a duck before?
You know, I never saw them when they weren't covered with dirt, so this is quite unique.
A l'orange.
Sitting on a rock instead of a building ledge.
Yeah, look at that. It's gorgeous. Sedona's beautiful. And these pictures came out beautifully.
Yeah, they're not bad, considering I had just picked the camera up. No instruction book or anything. It was pretty neat.
How much is the camera?
The camera's going to be $399 without Wi-Fi, $420 with Wi-Fi.
I love the idea of having Wi-Fi in a camera, because then you take the pictures and upload them immediately. I mean, that's why I like using a smartphone for pictures.
Exactly. So that's going to be, I think, $419 in May. And size, the camera body's 99%. Recycled materials, so that's a good thing. And I heard you talking to your listener earlier, and yes, it does shoot full HD movies. Has a little built-in memory in case you forget the memory card, but it takes both either an SD card or the Sony Stick Duo.
Thank goodness they don't make you buy the Sony Duo. That stuff.
No, they don't. They pick if you have a lot around, you could use those.
Yeah. Cool. Yeah. What is the model number on this?
The model number is HX30V, and it's on the Sony website, but you can only pre-order. I think they said shipping May 12th. So it's a little look ahead.
These look good. Dick leaves at gizwiz.biz, gizwiz.biz. That's his website. The What the Heck Is It contest is going on right now. You got another month to figure out what it is. 12 Mad Magazines, autographed by Mr. D for the right answer, 24 for the cleverest answer. So you don't really need to get it right. In fact, you have a better chance of winning if you don't. Gizwiz.biz. Sure. Stick around, Dick. We'll do the weekly daily Gizwiz in just a little bit. By the way, these are great pictures.
Thank you.
I'm impressed at your ability.
Well, yeah, I fell in twice, but the pictures are not bad.
what's really happened, and if I were a professional, I'd feel kind of bad, is that cameras have gotten so good. amateurs are taking really good pictures now.
They had like a little contest. I didn't win anything, but this one guy who won said, I hardly take pictures.
Yeah.
The camera did it. Yeah. So the cameras are really good.
It's a good looking little camera. It's available on Amazon for pre-order. The HX30V. Thank you, Dickie D. Hang around. We're going to do the weekly Daily Gizwiz, our podcast, in just a little bit.
I'll be here.
Many, many more gadgets. In fact, it'll be my review of the iPad, the new iPad. Manny Greenwood, Louisiana, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Manny.
Hey, how's it going, Leo? Thanks for taking my call. Looking good with the green shamrock there.
Yeah, you see that. Yeah, I didn't want to get pinched.
Yeah. Listen, a quick question. Everybody buys Windows machines and Mac machines. I was curious where I would go to get a Linux machine. Because I'm having trouble locating one online here.
That's a good question. Linux is really, it's a free operating system created in 1992 by a guy named Linus Torvalds. It's based on Unix. It's a very rock-solid, excellent operating system. And I think one of the reasons, for a while there were companies that sold Linux computers, but the truth is, for the most part, Linux is a do-it-yourselfer operating system, and most people just buy a PC and put Linux on it. So buying a Linux PC is getting harder and harder. Dell used to sell a number of Linux PCs. Not all their PCs have Linux as an option, but some do. I guess if you go to DELL.com, and by the way, I like Dell computers. I have nothing against Dell computers. You'll find a number of their computers, primarily the workstation solutions that you can install Linux on. It is a good idea to buy, if you can, buy a system that's pre-configured because then you know everything will work. One of the problems sometimes with Linux, putting it on another system, you know, just a Windows or a system that was originally Windows, is some things may not work. Some drivers may not be available. The chat room's telling me there is a company, small company called Puget Systems, P-U-G-E-T, systems.com. That specializes in Linux computers. These are stock PCs. You can customize them, and they will run Linux. You can buy them with Linux on them. Should save you money because Linux is free. Thanks for the call. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.